What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Rip City Rundown podcast. This is our final podcast before the 2024 NBA draft on June 26th, which is a Wednesday. You'll see our post first round reaction podcast coming out probably Wednesday night, if not Thursday morning, and then maybe one more at the end of the week to close out the entire draft season. We've got some questions for you guys today, and we're just going to kind of give our final little just opinions, our thoughts on all the possible prospects the Blazers could be looking at, and so on and so forth. We'll let you know who's first on our draft board still, if that has changed. If you haven't seen our first mock draft, I highly encourage you to go watch that or listen to that before you listen to this podcast, and then come back, listen to this, of course. West, how are you doing? It's just me and you today. No Cody today.
Just me and you. No Cody. Cody is actually, you'll see him in a couple weeks when we get with him. He's going to come in with a bang. He was telling us he's got some crazy opinions. Not even opinions. Some might say fact, depending on how you look at it. But that's in a few weeks. We got the draft in a week. And to be honest, Cole, it really doesn't feel like that hype or that exciting that a draft is about to happen, probably because it's a weaker draft in terms of the talent. But at the same time, as a Blazer fan, this is theoretically kind of the most exciting time of the year, if you will. I would argue opening night's a little more exciting because we're 0-0 at that point. But, you know, the draft is like, who are we getting? Who's improving this team right now?
I mean, I think I agree. I think Wednesday night's going to be the most exciting night of the Blazers season. I think you could see possible trades for the Blazers. You could just see us bring in two quality prospects. You could see us absolutely fumble the draft. And it's just a time. Let's just say it might not be the best time of the year, but it's the most entertaining and the most interesting. It's when we truly can ask the most questions about what the Blazers are going to look like next year, because obviously free agency is not huge for us. And especially when we're not in a position to win right now, free agency is definitely even more so not as important to us for this year. So, yeah, and like you said, Cody's going to come back. And I'm just going to say, viewers, you probably want to stay for a podcast coming out late June, early July, because Cody's going to bring some interesting things. He knows some things. And
yeah, he's gone. He's done some soul searching. He's taken a break. He's got school. You know, he's a very smart guy, but you know, he's been accumulating, hunting and gathering some information for us out on the front lines.
He really has, and that's not even a joke.
He's locked in right now, and he gave us just a taste the other night. But yeah, I might be honest with you guys, to the listeners right now, or the viewers, depending on if you're watching on Spotify or YouTube, I'm going to be just as surprised as you. It's going to be a reaction podcast, low key. But anyway,
yeah, we got a taste. We didn't get the full meal. Speaking of taste, this could be a terrible transition. But give him a taste. Give the viewers a taste on what you think the Blazers should do. A taste on your draft board. Has it changed from that last mock draft?
Honestly, I don't think mine has changed that much, because if you go back and watch that video, the pick I had, or the player that I had Portland selecting with the 7th pick, was Cody Williams. And I think at that time, Cody Williams was a back half the lottery guy. And since then, the past month, he's risen up. I still think he's in play for the Blazers. In fact, some people could argue the Blazers, if they really, really love him and he's their guy, you might need to move up a spot or two to get him. We can talk about that later on in the show, about what the Blazers do in terms of moving spots. Do they, you know, what is that going to look like? But yeah, Cody Williams is still my guy. I think the other thing that's obvious since the last time we did our mock draft is Alexander Starr is no longer the consensus number one pick. Resale shares getting buzz. I've heard Klingon get buzz. I mean, it's still just a wild card draft, but I thought that was interesting that Sar is not the shoe-in now.
Here's where I'm at, and I'm just going to throw a scenario straight off the cuff. Ooh, I think there really could be a scenario where Klingon goes one. I really think that could be a scenario, because I think he's the most, like, of the guys that are being mocked to possibly go one, he is obviously, in my opinion at least, the most surefire. You know who he is. He is going to protect the rim. He's going to catch lobs. He's going to be... like, he's going to probably have a Derek Lively impact as a rookie. He really probably could. You obviously, you think Reese Usher, you think a guy like Sar has higher upside. That's pretty much of a consensus, because they have more of a jump shot and things of that nature. I think if Klingon goes one, which I think, again, is a very, not a high possibility, but it's a realistic possibility, I think Reese Usher could still go two. And I really think the Blazers right now, if I threw out a hot take for draft night, it's we're trading up to 3 with Houston and drafting Alexander Starr.
So
I think in the first mock draft, you said the only guy we're not going to talk about is Sarr because we're guaranteed not to get him. I think if we were at a 1% then, we're at a 10%, 15% now.
I don't mind that take. You know, this podcast is a very safe haven for the hottest of takes, a lot of them coming from yours truly. With that being said, I'll throw this back to you, this question back to you. I'll flip it around. What do the Blazers have to give up in order to get 3? And what is even worth going up to 3? And does that change if it's Sarr compared to Reed Sheppard at 3? Like, is Sarr worth? I guess that's a question Joe Cronin in the front office and Mike Schmidt can only answer. Mike Schmitz. But it's a question.
You know, it's a thing. It's a question we talked about last year. We were like, we hope the Charlotte Hornets draft Brandon Miller because Scoot Henderson's going to have more value at 3. You could say the Rockets are in the same position. They hope Sarr drops them. Because I really do think, even though like Shepard's been mocked there, I've seen Klingon's been mocked there, I think in a perfect world, the Rockets are trading back and not adding another young guy to the realm of just the team. Because I think like they have what they want.
With that being said, does a veteran guard in the name of Malcolm Brogdon interest the Houston Rockets?
I think I could see a Brogdon. I could see the 14th pick. I mean, I think maybe if you're going up for Sarr, you ought to go Brogdon in 7 instead of Brogdon in 14.
I agree.
Which in that scenario would you be doing?
If this is a thing. If it was Sarr, for me, I would do that. I'm very high on Alexander Sarr. I think to me, if I was the Hawks, not to say what they should do, but if I was the Hawks, I would draft Sarr. I get Klingon as the surefire pick, but to me, the number one overall pick, it's got to be the guy with the highest. I just think Sarr is the perfect combination of play now and also just highest ceiling, I think, in terms of the skill set he has. And I know he has his shortcomings, and that's why he's not the consensus number one now. But if you look at the Blazers, their only threat on the wing truly is Jeremy Grant. And he's old. He's just going to get older. And he's a great veteran. In fact, my brother and I, we were watching some Blazers OKC 2019 back in the day. Jeremy Grant was young and spry and a great player. And he still is. But at some point, the Blazers are going to have to get that premier front court player. And to me, I don't really want it to be a center, because I think with the Damian Lillard trade, you have at least committed the next couple years to seeing this Ayton thing through. And now again, if Klingon falls to 7, that we can, it's very fluid conversations with this draft, because there's no right answer. Truly, there's no right answer. So Klingon trading up for Klingon at 3 could be a stupid move if you're a Blazer fan. And at the same time, it could be a great move to draft him 7. It really is all in the eye of the beholder, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at teams that you could possibly trade up with, I think, seriously, the Hawks, like, who knows if they want to keep that pick? I would think they do. I think they're more likely to trade Trey or DeJounte than they are the pick. I think the Wizards are staying where they are. I think you look at Houston, and then I think you do look at a team like Detroit, because Detroit's got a lot of young guys, and at some point, like, this is something I hope the Blazers don't fall into over the next coming years, when they're most likely not going to be back in the playoffs for maybe 1, 2, 3 more years. I hope that just because you have a draft pick and just because you're getting a young guy doesn't mean that's going to make the team better. Like, sometimes there's subtraction by addition, not this addition by subtraction everyone talks about. Subtraction by addition is a real thing. And I think the Pistons are one of those teams where you already have Ivy, you already have Cunningham, already have Duren, you already have Thompson. Unless you get that perfect fit, which everyone's saying is Bouzelis right now, you have a person, say Bouzelis is off the board at 3, because he could very well go 3. Again, this is a draft that's so fluid, like you said.
Well,
if they're stuck with no one but Bouzelis, are they trading back because they don't have a guy that fits on their roster perfectly?
They could, but I really think if you're a Blazer fan and you love Cody Williams, Detroit's a sneaky Cody Williams team. I think if they wanted to go with like that fit like a glove type, because I mean, yeah, you said Asar Thompson, but he's not a wing. I mean, I think in his prime, so to speak, he's going to be kind of that big playmaking guard. I mean, he's not going to be your floor spacer 3 and D. So, I mean, Cody Williams is a sneaky team. Bouzelis has always been linked to Detroit. I want to go back to the Houston thing, because you threw it off the bat to get us started here. It's a very, very, very great conversation. To me, if you're Houston, they're a very interesting team to trade with, because they could deem they already have their Sarr type in Jabari Smith Jr. Or if you're the Blazers, are you looking to see if Jabari Smith Jr. is available type thing? Like, are you just really trying to work with Houston to get that 6'10 front court player, either in Sarr that you can develop yourself or Jabari Smith Jr.? he might need a change of scenery. I mean, he clearly hasn't been, I don't want to say he hasn't hit his check marks, or, you know, he hasn't climbed the ladder as a player in this league, but he definitely hasn't, you know, shown what he's fully capable of yet in Houston.
Yeah, I think that's a scenario. You just take out the whole pick thing, say, and we're still talking Sarr drops to three. They're just saying, we want Sarr and we don't want Jabari Smith Jr. So Jabari Smith Jr., now you're on the block. And instead of trading up for the third pick, you're trading Brogdon 14 for Jabari Smith Jr. You could trade. Are you trading Anthony Simons for Jabari Smith Jr. at all?
I'm not. No?
Really? I think Jabari Smith Jr. probably holds more value in this league than Anthony.
Interesting.
Just because positionally, he's also younger, and he definitely had a good year last year, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I really don't know what teams think when it comes to Jabari Smith Jr. Of course, the positional need and the skill set at 6'10 is attractive for sure. You should turn your messages off.
Yeah.
It's fine though. I think Jabari Smith Jr. is a great option for the Blazers if he becomes available. I know we've become the podcast that is like, Jaylen Brown, you are Blazer, and Joel Embiid, you are Blazer. But this one, I feel like, in terms of where Jabari Smith Jr. is in the pecking order of the NBA, it's a little more realistic. Of course, it all depends on what Houston wants, but I think if you're the Blazers, whether you draft or trade on draft night, you got to come out of the lottery, or at least the first round, with two forwards that you can sell the fans on. I'm not asking them to be great from day one, but you gotta get two front court players that are, their minimum height is 6'7". I'll say it right now. I'm not doing this 6'5 forward guard hybrid that we play at the three. I'm looking at you, Shane Sharp and Norman Powell. 6'7 and above, and they have to be under the age of 25 if you're going to trade.
That's the problem here. I think that's a big ask. I really think
it is. I don't think it is, because you can just straight up draft two forwards at 7 and 14. It's not a hard ask at all.
So what about a guy like Connect? I've seen the Blazers be very interested in him, and he's like, what, 6'5", 6'6"?
What is Connect's ceiling, or how do you think he's going to stick in this league? Scoring?
Shooting,
scoring. It's kind of like a bench piece.
Yeah, I mean,
could he start one day? I'm just like, if you're going to go down this rebuilding route, then I would rather you swing and miss, because it can't, and we're not going to be worse than this. I mean, Connect, I would rather you draft Saloon or whatever, for example, and possibly hit, than, like, I'd rather you have a 50% chance on Saloon than a 75.
I have a wild question. Just because there's so many French guys in this draft, I have a question.
Okay.
And not that we knew what this guy was like in the draft process, because obviously we weren't worried about second round picks. Do you think Ryan Rupert would be like one of these lottery guys in this draft? Do you think he would be like Saloon? Because I don't know, and I know you don't either, really. We don't know what Ryan Rupert was doing in the French league, but who knows? It's just interesting.
I don't know about lottery pick, but I definitely think Rupert could be a first round pick this year for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I feel like Saloon and like the lottery picks have the measurables. Not that Rupert doesn't, but like Saloon's like a big ass dude. And smooth. I think Rupert's offense is a little rough. It's around funky. The edges, a little unpolished.
Yeah. So I'm just going to throw some more questions at you. We got some questions from the viewers, from the followers. And then just right off the bat, we'll just go ahead and ask this one, because I think it's a good question that leads to all other questions. It's kind of what we've been talking about already, from Sebas_Collins1. What is the perfect scenario for Portland at 7-14? In a perfect world,
at 7-14.
At 7, just with 7-14.
Okay. So this is not taking into account trading up or getting someone, I'm assuming. 7 would be you're drafting Cody Williams. To me, you're drafting Cody Williams or Saloon at 7. And then 14, this is where it gets hard. It's like 14. Honestly, what I would do with 14 is I would either take just a swing on a guy with just an immense upside, but it's probably like years away from being anything. Or I would just, I don't know, use that. And I know you said it can't trade, but originally in my other mock draft, I wanted Cody at 7, Saloon at 14. Well, both of those guys are going to be gone by 10 probably. for being honest. And they might not be. So I would say if we can get Cody and Saloon, Cody Williams and Saloon, those are my two guys. But I don't think that's realistic. So 14, I would just take a swing on a guy, or I would use that to trade for someone or trade up.
Here's another thing that I was just thinking of. G League Ignite. They've had two notable people get drafted so far in the league, and they have two this year, and obviously Bouzelis and Ron Holland. Scoot and Jalen Green. Two guys that didn't come into the league really as polished as everyone was saying. They've been playing against professionals. They've been playing against elite talent. They're going to be league ready. Do you think?
Well, we've seen reports of. How old was Jalen Green when he got drafted?
I don't know, but that's the same thing. It's all okay. Well, it's going with Bouzelis, and it's going with
fine. But I'm just saying, like, Ron Scoot. Holland. Yes, Scoot was like playing professionally since 16, but like the dude just. Like, the dude can't, it's years away from having a legal beverage.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, does that make you want to avoid G League Ignite players, specifically the two in Matis Bouzelis and Ron Holland, or are you like, other teams are going to avoid them, give me a swing on Ron Holland at 14?
I would be in the camp of take a swing, because that's where our team is. If I'm the Hawks, and I'm avoiding a rebuild, or I'm the Bulls, and I'm avoiding a rebuild, then I would like Dalton Kennett. A win now player who's got a very obvious ceiling, a high floor player. But as the Blazers, when you don't really have anything to lose. I mean, your GM has very clearly, maybe not verbally communicated, but with his nonverbal communication and decision making, he's very fine with being bad. We had this conversation the other night. He's very fine with being bad. In fact, you think it's very easy to be bad. It's very easy to be a bad team, which it is. It is, but I would, neither here nor there. That's another discussion. I would take the swing on Ron Holland as a,
I think
from
I
a
would,
Blazers standpoint.
I would agree, but it makes you think. It means you got to put a lot of faith into your developmental staff, because you're not getting a guy that's probably developed.
Why did we hire Mike Schmitz?
Exactly. Trade wise, I saw a question from one of our people. We already talked about kind of moving up for Sar. Say you're just moving up for the pick. You're not including Jabari Smith Jr. You're trying to move up for the second pick. You're even trying to move up to the first pick. What is the most you're giving up, and what is like a realistic package in your opinion?
If it's the number one overall pick, I think it's impossible to not include one of Simons or Shaden, right? It's a number one pick in a draft.
I think even if you don't think they're going to be as good as Simons or Shaden, if you're moving up, like just the optics of moving, of trading a number one pick, if you're the Hawks, like you have to get something valuable in return. You can't get Malcolm Gardner in the seventh pick.
I would not trade up to number one unless you're in love with someone and you think they're going to be gone by three or two. I just think the Hawks, I just feel like it'd be a weird look for the Hawks to just luck out like that and then trade back. Like, I think they're going to take Reese Auchere. That's what I've heard. Again, I'm not in people's pants trying to figure out information. So, but I think the number three pick, like we've talked about it. Number three seems like a sweet spot to me, because is it really worth trading up from 7 to 5? Like, again, you're really just asking yourself this question of, what's the value and is it worth it? Because you're just trying to be the team that gets the most value, which at the end of the day is kind of a stupid argument, because each team's value is probably different. And what I deem as a fan as value is probably not what Joe Cronin deems as value. Fair. But does that make Joe Cronin right just because he's a general manager? I'm not, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's like a spectrum. Like who's right? Who's wrong? If I have Cody Williams at 4 on my draft board and I trade up and the Blazers trade up to number 5 to get him, but we give up Brogdon and 7 and 14 to move up 2 spots, Joe Cronin might be like, well, we got him at 5. We had him going at 4. And then we're going to be like, but you traded all these things for it. So it's kind of a dumb argument, but I think 3 is a sweet spot to circle back.
I mean, Kevin Costner picked Vontae Mac number 1 and he didn't go against his board. Dude. And it turned out good. So.
Dude, and he got his first round picks back, and he wanted David Putney because he felt like it.
Is Alex Starr a Bo Callahan type player?
You know what?
We don't know.
What What if Joe Cronin calls the Houston GM, he shuts him down, and then he calls him back, and Joe Cronin's like, you know, we live in a different world than we did 30 seconds ago.
If Joe Cronin did that, oh my gosh, it's just his aura.
Guys, unfortunately, that is not the news that Cody has for you. Unfortunately.
No, but we have good news from Cody, though, but we're not going to get there yet. Question. Another question for you. Now, this is just big picture, and we were talking about this the other night when we were kind of talking about what we wanted to talk about for the pod. So we're in this rebuild, and obviously we're not going to know the answers to this rebuild for a good 2 years. Like, and I can have the opinion that Joe Cronin has not done a great job, and another person can have an opinion that Joe Cronin's done a great job, and another person can have an opinion that Joe Cronin is, we don't know. At what point are we going to be able to actually like start getting answers from Joe, like understanding if he's doing a good job or not? Because I feel like a lot of people in Blazer world, a lot of Blazer media, a lot of Blazer fans that are pro Joe are just like, it's a rebuild. Hey, we're waiting for answers next summer. Hey, come next, then next summer. And in summer of 2021, we were saying we got to make a splash by next summer. And then we got to make a splash by this deadline. I'm not saying like, let's go make a splash. I'm just saying like, when are we going to get to the point where we're like, all right, Joe, what do we got? Well, here's what you did.
I think I'm going to judge Joe Cronin. God, it's just so unfair. But I'm going to judge him based on if Scoot and Shaden can coexist and be a backcourt that can actually do something in the league, and which who knows, and what he get, like how he pivots from Simons and Jeremy, because like let's like what I, right now as the team is constructed, like you can't grade Joe Cronin on wins and losses. We've had this conversation about Chauncey. It's the same conversation about Chauncey. You can't grade him on wins and losses because we're grading on a curve and we're the dumb kid in the class. So we're not getting a high grade. We're not getting a lot of wins. So I guess you.
That makes me so mad is Chauncey has no control over that.
No, he doesn't. And that's why you've seen that friction over the summer at least. Because Chauncey's like, I'm over here winning 20 games a year. This isn't going to help me get another job if I get fired because I have a 35% winning percentage.
If that,
exactly. So it's definitely a difficult situation in terms of how do you grade Joe. It's just, we went through his moves. I mean, they're unspectacular. They're necessary. I guess I applaud him for making the necessary steps. I think, I don't know. I mean, overall, can't tell you. I think execution of the trades, he's done well. I think everything else about a GM, instilling confidence in your fan base, not lying to your fan base, he's failed. He's failed miserably. And I honestly think, would your opinion of Joe Cronin change if he came out from the get-go? Which this is probably unrealistic, because you can't show your hand as a GM. But if he came out from the get-go and was like, we're going to trade Damian Lillard, and we're going to get a package for him. And screw Miami, we're going to do this. Because what I want you to understand, I don't want you to have your personal biases of keeping Dame affect how you view a GM. Because sometimes you got to make those decisions. I don't think Boston fans are happy with Brad Stevens that he got rid of Marcus Smart until they found out somehow they got Kristaps in two first for that. Yeah. But
to answer your question, at the time, if he said that, I probably would have been like, okay, I get it. The problem is, I don't know if I just like the if you're going to do the rebuild, I just don't know if I like the way and the pieces we're building around, because we're doing a rebuild and we have more athletic guards that we're building around, but we are doing like a more boosted up athletic, less experienced, a more raw and athletic version of the Neil Olshey special, which is build around guards. And it's just repetitive.
I get that. But I just, to me at least, think if you're Joe Cronin and you undid the mess of the previous GM, I don't think you would try to go down the same path. To me, it feels like when they're trying to build this puzzle and they haven't found the most important piece yet. It's kind of like they're trying to build around this piece they don't have. And here's the very unfortunate part and kind of the sucky part about the NBA, to me at least, is you kind of don't have control. You do, but you really don't have control over how you get that centerpiece. Because did the Spurs have control getting Victor Wembanyama? No, they lucked out. And we're just introducing luck, which I'm sure Cody just absolutely loves. Cody loves luck. But we're just, you know, when you rebuild, it's kind of a luck-based system in a sense. We got unlucky this year by dropping, but I mean, you're just going to have to find your centerpiece either through that or via trade. And how many centerpieces are available via trade right now? And that's an argument. Back then, maybe there was. Okay? Mm-hmm.
I have a question that I want you to truly answer honestly. I don't want you to, like, the easy answer is to say, yes, you would still choose today. But if you went back to summer of 2023, and if I told you Scoot was going to be look like how he did his rookie year, and if I told you we were going to be in this position, if you knew the draft was going to be this poor from just, again, it could not be poor, but at the moment it's poor, just in our opinion. If you knew is this poor, if you knew Shaden was only going to play 20 games in 2023-24, if you knew that if you knew Scoot wasn't going to be that good, and if you knew that, you know, what Cody said is true, would you say, I want to try my hardest to not go down that path? And by the way, we just got breaking news. The Chicago Bulls are trading Alex Caruso for Josh Giddey. That's it.
So again, like, that's an example of what the hell. Like, how does Sam Presti do that?
Yeah, exactly. Because he's some, you know, it's one of those things where it's how does he do it, but he continue, like, just how Brad Stevens, how does Brad Stevens pull off these trades? How does Sam Presti pull off these trades? Who knows? How does Danny Ainge pull off these trades? But, like, they do it somehow. And I'm waiting for Joe to do that. But back to my question.
I would want to take the Damian Lillard path.
Okay.
So I guess since we're talking about Joe Cronin.
It's the most interesting guy in Portland. The most interesting thing to talk about at this point.
So no one thought Scoot Henderson was going to come out of the gate and be special.
True.
And maybe you did. And if you did, that's a you problem. It's not a Joe Cronin problem.
Yeah.
Okay. I get he was very not good. I understand that. The other thing is Shaden played 20 games. Now, how is that Joe Cronin's fault that he got hurt? And again,
oh no, I'm not saying this because Joe Cronin's fault. I'm just saying, like, the reality of, like, this is now where we're at.
Okay, sure. Like, if, like, I would go back to the Dame thing if I found out we'd get the number one pick last year. Like, you can only make the decision at the time. And
I do think at the time, though, I think we can go back and, like, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here and not trying to say, like, Shaden's going to not be good. But, like, we had a lot of people hyping up Shaden after just a 10, 15 game sample size.
Be careful. You really don't want to find yourself on the other end if he turns out good.
Oh,
you got to travel.
Win-win. It's a win-win.
Yeah, either but call I don't it or like he's good. It when you, it's annoying when people do that.
No, but I'm genuinely, like, if I had to, I think if you ask the average Blazer fan right now, I think they would say Shaden Sharpe's going to be a future all-star, and I just don't think that's the case.
Okay. I think in terms of smart people, I think that's just the normal take, because how many guys make the all-star team? Like 24 out of 400? I mean, I don't think he's going to be an all-star. I think there's a difference between being an all-star and being all-star caliber. I think he could be all-star caliber. I think playing in Portland is going to destroy his case every year. But yeah. Joe Cronin is the most interesting guy in Portland, and I don't know.
This is tough, man, and it sucks because I hate having these conversations, but it's unfortunately, like, the only conversation I can – there's not much else to talk about, man. Like, this whole waiting game and rebuilding, like, yeah, we said it when we were, like, drafted Scoot. We were like, this is going to suck. This is not going to be fun. Next 3 years we're gonna look back, and these are gonna be irrelevant years in our Blazer fandom.
I mean, if we're asking questions about would I do this or this in hindsight, if I could go back, I would not beat the Clippers in 2016 in the playoffs. That allowed us to sign some stupid contracts. Yeah. I would go back and miss the playoffs in 2016.
I guess.
So it's just like I think Joe Cronin, I'm not supporting the guy, but I'm also like, I'm not gonna be against him just because he traded my favorite player. I'm not gonna do that. And would the Blazers be better right now if they had Dame still on the team? For sure. but both paths result in not winning a championship, most likely. Which, again, let's talk about that. Is it even fair to judge the path we take based on if it's going to win a championship? I don't think it is.
I think the biggest thing you can judge is, like, you can't judge it now, of course, but, like, when we're just having conversations with our kids in 15 years, when we're having conversations with our friggin' with each other in 15 years, like, we're going to look back and we're going to say, if we never really become a sustainable playoff team, if we never have a championship caliber team that's capable of making a conference finals or something, then, like, we're going to look back and say, we were right. That was a stupid decision to rebuild and try to restart the rebuild based on some guards. Like, it will. And I just think it's a,
again, I don't think that's our goal is to build around guards, because I think if you're like, he would have to be stupid to literally do the thing that the reason why people think Joe Cronin is bad is because all his moves have been, like, not great, because he's cleaning up the mess that the previous guy did. So why would he want to do what Neil did? And what did Neil do? He built around guards. I don't think drafting Shaden was necessarily a part of the rebuilding plan. That's Dame here. And then we wouldn't be having this conversation if Charlotte took Scoot. So, like, that's not Joe, like, it's like, are you more of a Joe Cronin fan if Brandon Miller's on this team instead?
I'm not sure. I think I would see a little bit more of a vision. Because I think it's just if I'm a GM, I just don't think it's smart. You can say we're not building around guards, but, like, what I think we can probably both agree what kickstarted our rebuild is the fact that we moved up to 3. Damn well knowing it was probably going to be Scoot.
I mean, so it was 50-50.
If he's kickstarted his rebuild, and he's saying, okay, I'm rebuilding, but I know I'm going to get the guy to build around in 2025. I think that's a little dumb, because you're then just leaving it up to chance. I think you don't.
Okay, so you think it's smarter to build around a 32-year-old guard as opposed to a 19-year-old guard?
A 32-year-old guard?
Guards at the end of the day.
Probably, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I think there's definitely, it's impossible not to have this conversation without an affinity for a certain team, because the reason why I'm a fan is because of Dame, and he's brought me so much more joy to watch. But I just, like, if we're talking about CJ, I don't think we're talking about, is Joe Cronin bad? We'd be like, that was a necessary move, you know? It just looks bad in hindsight because Scoot had 2 -60 games.
I think it just looks bad because I'm coming through the reality that, like, starting a rebuild in 2023 was not the best time to start a rebuild.
Why?
I think, like, because you're getting your the draft you're going to tank for is not a good draft. I think
Did you know that? The
smartest thing is to, like, you should have tried to go all in this year and for 2024. And then if you fail miserably, you would think that, like, your guys are still have some value and you trade them now for what's supposed to be a good draft in 2025.
I mean, so would you trade 7-14 for a 2025 lottery pick?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
And if we do that, that was like when we were watching the lottery, like, we're happy the Warriors made it into the lottery, but, like, what would have been better for team building possibly is that pick just jumped to top 4, so our pick could have conveyed to 2025. It would have been risky because you don't know if you're going to get back in the lottery, but, like, I think the 20th pick of next year's draft is probably better than the 14th pick in this year's draft.
I agree. I mean, the last time, but we didn't know the draft was going to be bad, and the only reason we're saying that is because that's what other people are saying. Last time it was this bad of a draft was 2013, and who went 15th? Giannis. You have the 14th pick. Not saying we're going to do that. I'm just saying there's studs in every draft. So why not? Right. Like we're getting mad at Joe Cronin on hypothetical, I think, at this point. And because there's not a right answer on if he's good or bad or if he made the right move or not. You took
I just
a
think
rebuilding.
He's the one that's like, he's the reason we, like, keep saying, like, it's not fun to be a Blazer fan. There's not a lot of, there's nothing to talk about There's nothing. There's not a lot of.
But I'm not going to compromise my quick. I want to see Dame go off and break his abs.
It's really not about Dame. It's truly.
I'm just saying, my as a fan, of course, I want to see my favorite player Dame break his abs off to try to get an 8 seed in the bubble. That's really fun to watch. But is that like, did that keep Neil's job?
But what I'm saying is, I just don't. I think I can understand where you're saying, and I hope you can understand what I'm saying. It's just the fact that, like, if the thing is, even if someone turns out super good for the Blazers in this year's draft, I don't think it's like I think Joe Cronin's plan all along was never like, we're going to get our stud in the 2024 draft. So just like looking back at some of his trades and like looking into. That. Huh?
Who said that?
Nobody. That's why, or you didn't say that, but I'm just, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, two lottery picks in this draft, like even looking back at other trades, like the Drew Holiday trade, like, and I think we can go back and look at all these reactions, and I don't think I'm like over the moon on all these trades here. The only trade I look back and I was like, oh, this is a for sure good trade is like the Ayton aspect, because we really just traded Nurk, Nas, and Keon for Ayton straight up. Like, there wasn't much. Dame didn't have much to do with that. Like, we could have done pulled that off without Dame being involved if we wanted to. So I just am looking at where we're at, and then I'm looking back at how I felt after all these things that Joe's done, and I'm just like, it makes sense that I feel this way, because it was pretty easy to see it coming, I feel like.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like it's really hard to, like, the Blazers are not entitled to being good. And we were good for 10 years, probably mm-hmm. even longer. I mean, we had like a year or two of rebuilding sprinkled in there. Dame's rookie year was not great. The year before was not great. We had like 10 good years. And I don't know. I feel like maybe we just feel like we're supposed to be good every year. And it's supposed to be a super fun ride of having the best role model in sports on our team for no reason. Like, and that definitely was part of the sting of getting rid of it. But like, you're not, every team just can't be good all the time. And mm-hmm. I get Joe Cronin is operating the ship right now, but it's not his fault. It is his fault that we're bad in the sense of he's made the decisions to put us in this situation. But I don't think it's because he's a bad GM, because he's not trying to be good yet. And the other 29 teams are not entitled to give the Blazers a chance to be good. Like, if he wants, and I think in hindsight, the Drew Holiday deal is something that I was fine with at the time. You got, everyone was really confused why we traded Drew Holiday for Dame, basically. And then we turn it around and get a couple firsts in Robert Williams. And unfortunately, Robert Williams was injured. And you could argue, well, we always knew he was going to get hurt. We always knew it. And I mean, that's going to feed the anti-Joe Cronin fire. It's very easy to say that in hindsight. We knew it. I don't think that's the case, that you knew it. And
I think most people would say that's a risky move.
Well, you didn't say it when it happened.
We can check the tape after this pod. I probably did.
Okay. Well, and the Warriors pick is something that the Celtics had, and is Drew, like, now we can talk about what Drew Holiday is really worth. And apparently, maybe now you think he's worth more because he's surrounded by four All-Stars.
No, I'm not saying he's worth more. I'm just like, I mean, it just goes back to the entire Dame trade, like, the Dame package, like what it's turned into, like we can argue if it's a good package or a bad package. That's a opinionated thing. And we can stop talking about Joe Cronin at this point, because again, like we're gonna have these recyclable conversations for the next 2 years. So like,
well, I'm cool with not, like, you know where I stand. I just don't think you can judge a GM based on how good the team is, because you can't look at it through a certain lens if we're very obviously at a point in the franchise where that's clearly not the case. Like, you And if this becomes a dysfunctional thing for the next 5 years, then absolutely bad GM. But this is like year two. And the first year is like literally last year was the first year.
What if tonight or what if on draft night he drafts Kinect and Topic, or he drafts Muzelis and Topic? If he drafts like Topic, or if he drafts like Dillingham,
then I will be I will draft the petition to get his ass fired.
Love that.
Like I'm not gonna sit here and praise the man for things that are horrible. I just don't think he's done anything egregious yet. The only thing he's been egregious on is the communication of the Damian Lillard saga and the handling of that. And when Dame didn't even acknowledge him in his thank you letter to Portland, I think that's very obvious about why that was the case. But the soft skills of being a GM, he is ass at. Fire him, fire him, fire him. But what are we doing? I'm just like, I'm at the point where it's like, I don't really care how good the Blazers are. I just want to see the people develop. And I want to see growth from Scoot and Shaden this year.
I think the difference between the two of us is you're more of like a glass half full type of guy. And I'm just kind of a glass half empty. You're going to say we're rebuilding. So we're going to turn into the Magic or Thunder. And I'm saying we're rebuilding. We could possibly turn into the Pistons at this point.
Well, I think part of it is your expectations are way higher than mine of what this team needs to be in the near future.
I'm not worried about at this point. I'm not worried about winning in the near future. I'm just worried about
what made this season a failure then?
The fact that the two guys you traded Drew Holiday for, basically traded Dame for, are most likely not any valuable at all anymore. They probably don't hold much value. The fact that you are building around...
We don't know that.
I think we probably would have traded Brogdon if his value was good at the trade deadline. I really think we would have. I think he would probably... And that could change, but we're operating in the present right now, and we're looking at a Robert Williams that you can't convince me that his value is higher than when we got him. You can't convince me Brogdon's value is higher than when we got him. I feel like that's pretty common sense. We're looking at Shaden that we haven't, we're operating in the present right now. He's played half the games he can play in his career. Scoot had a very underwhelming year one. And then you're just...
Was Scoot bad? Yeah, he was garbage. But I think my point is maybe you and Cody expected him to be something way better than I did, because... I mean, we knew the statistics on rookie point guards coming into the league, but then it actually starts happening and it doesn't look good, and then people want to be oh, it's an absolute failure.
When the environment of the team is not that good, I think when you're just bad, the environment's gonna be bad. What's gonna be the turning point for them to be good? Is Ayton really going to be the center of the future? I hope so, but it's just the reality of rebuilding. There's just so many questions, and the odds are when you're rebuilding, majority of those questions aren't going to be answered. And getting out of a rebuild and going and winning a championship is not even winning a championship, just competing for a championship. It's so hard. And when we don't have that guy we know we can build around, that we know is going to be good, and odds are we're not going to get that this year. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm just we have the, again, what everyone was using, what Joe Cronin was using. It's can't miss prospect, generational prospect for Scoot. So when I don't know that guy is even going to be an all-star, it's just a little scary.
Okay. And I can't tell you how to feel, because all that you just said is super opinionated. And the only thing that's true is he had a bad rookie season. He could come out at the gates and be great, be inefficient, but put up numbers. And your opinion might change. But I would think Scoot... I just don't think Joe Cronin... or not even Joe Cronin, our scout team or whoever, like, and even non-Blazer fans, Scoot's a generational prospect. He's a number one pick in other drafts. Like, I don't understand how we can't really get mad at Joe Cronin for drafting that guy in the position that he did. So the Scoot thing is a unique one. It unfortunately is going to be the trump card on if it's
I do think like, again, this is just like situational. So I can't even get mad at Joe Cronin for this. I'm just mad at the position the he decided to go with the Blazers. It's just like, if he was 6'8 and had a bad rookie year, you could like, I think it would be a little more like, okay, I at least saw the vision. But it's like, it's just like.
So Chris Murray.
Oh boy.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I'm just like, I'm just thinking about like all these guards in the NBA. And I'm just, the unsettling thing as a Blazer fan is we don't have the guy that's going to lead us to a championship right now. It's very unsettling.
But neither does 25 other teams. 20 other teams. Like, let's be honest. Of course, the answer is probably yes. But is Embiid that guy?
Okay, maybe not lead. I'll say lead to a top 10 team in the NBA. Like,
all right. So 10 are. So yeah, I mean, we're getting. So yeah, there's probably 2/3 of the league has that, I would say. If that's the criteria, we're definitely not in that situation right now. And I understand the concern that it's not on the roster right now. But to me, and maybe this is where we differ, I'm always going to expect the best out of the players that are on the team that I like. So, and you might not, and you can feel that way. That's fine. What Cody knows these days that we'll discuss in the coming weeks, I definitely think that's not a good thing. Do we even know who that applies to at this point? I know you threw out that take, but Cody's gatekeeping information, guys. It's really unfortunate.
He wants to drop a bomb come summer. So.
Yeah, and you guys know he can't talk anyway. July. He can't talk anyway.
Save it for the people. It's fine.
Well, I know we were supposed to do mock draft, mm-hmm. but it typically results in what we just talked about, and that's fine. That's the most exciting.
Final thing. Just give me what you hope the two guys we have. I think you already said it, but say it again to close it out. Who do you hope we leave Wednesday night with?
You're just putting fuel on the fire with this Sar potential. You know how I feel about Sar. Sorry at 3.
That's one of those. I don't think it's actually going to happen.
Would you be happy? I'm not even going to ask you. You're going to be happy at Joe because you probably won't be. But would you be content with Joe getting Sar at 3, 4, 7 and Malcolm Brogdon?
Very content. There's a lot of, like, even though this draft is trash, if I will be perfectly fine if you trade Malcolm Brogdon a pick to move up 2 spots. I think, like,
he's that.
Because I think his value's low, and also just like, I kind of just want to wipe my hands of Malcolm Brogdon. I don't want to keep talking about his value. Like, if you tell me to move up 2 spots, like, you can't – I have no clue how much that costs, and you could convince me that, oh, it was going to cost Malcolm Brogdon, and I'll believe you. And that's fine. But I hope we leave Wednesday night with one guaranteed guy over 6'8". So Cody Williams, Bouzelis, Saloon. I'm going to lean Cody Williams because I think I'm biased toward him. He played in the Pac-12. So I'm going to say Cody Williams and low-key, give me freaking – I like Ware out of – I kind of would like a center, low-key. I kind of like the idea of 2 wings, but I wouldn't be mad at a center at 14. Missy, Ware, those guys.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, if Malcolm Brogdon is the deal-breaker in a trade to move up and you want to trade up and get your guy and it costs Malcolm Brogdon,
I think that's
fine business.
There's a difference between Dame and Brogdon when it comes to like being a mentor. I don't think Scoot needs Brogdon as a mentor to be good. I'll just say that.
Well, and if he doesn't, I don't think he needs it anymore.
Yeah.
Got it for a year.
Yeah.
Got it for a year.
It's not like I'm like Brogdon's teaching him all his tricks. Like, oh, I'm going to teach you how to be a 18-7 guy.
that jump shot that's way out here.
Yeah. And then over under 0.5 trades for the Blazers. Can revolve around a player, can revolve around picks.
On draft night?
We'll say first round draft night, because again, this just is two nights.
First round. I will say, does this include the Blazers being the runt of a three-team trade?
The what?
The runt. Like the,
yeah, this includes any part. This could be like the Blazers trading
Banton.
Banton to get a pick.
For an extra
second, round pick.
Second or something?
Any trade.
I'll say over 0.5.
Okay. And final question, percentage that either Jeremy or Anthony gets dealt.
I would lean by the time that during the draft.
Yeah.
Or before the season starts.
Oh, during the draft. That's a bad question.
10% chance.
Yeah. Okay. My final actual question.
Final question.
And I won't be mad at Joe Curran if he goes out and drafts. And if he drafts a guard, I'll be mad, basically. If he drafts Connect and freaking Filipowski, I'll be mad. If he drafts, you know the scenarios where I will most likely be mad. You know the scenarios where I'll be happy.
Yep.
Will we be in a upbeat mood come next podcast? Are we going to be happy with what Joe Cronin did?
Man, that's such a relative statement. But if it's the positional need, I think he's going to draft the right positions. I do. I mean, there's been so much just narrative building from the offseason and like, oh my gosh, we have so many guards. And I think Connect is a sneaky one, though, because he's like that. He scratched the itch a little bit. He's a little bit of a guard.
Yeah.
Joe Cronin can scratch that itch. You know, you got to get that new shiny guard every year. God, frick me.
Yeah.
But no, I think we take two guys over 6'7".
All right.
If we take two.
I think we're going to go no live stream for the draft. I think we're going to really just lock in, kind of gather our thoughts before we go. We'll do a podcast right after the draft.
We got screwed last year, guys.
Yeah, live streams just do it. They take me out. They drain my energy. I need a little time to let my thoughts kind of marinate before I just release them to the world.
Yeah, seriously.
So that's all we got for this podcast, guys. I mean, we talked pre-podcast. We wanted to keep this 20, 30 minutes. We're going 50 plus, but you know, sometimes when there's not a lot of times where I'm like, I'm dying to talk about the Blazers, but when I start talking about them, they can go down a rabbit hole, and it sure in fact did right there. So draft on Wednesday, second round Thursday. You'll see our next podcast post first round on Wednesday. Make sure to follow our Twitter and Instagram for any updates, and we'll see you next time. Peace.